I'm Pig Don Luca, smoke you like my hookah. Yeah. Pump fake right, then I step back in and lose you. That's a boss move maneuver, billionaire entrepreneur. Mark Cuban on the viewer, put you rookies on a skewer. I stay shitting on you boys like I came up from the sewer. Used to have a lot of doubters, now I got a lot fewer. What you saying to me? I hope you save it for me. I'm about to kill the game, and I put it in my testimony.
Hi, welcome back to the Mainstream Mouse Podcast. This is your host, Will. I'm joined here by my co-host, Jaren.
What is up, guys?
We are returning to you guys after quite the long sabbatical, as we obviously stopped the podcast. This can be attributed to, you know, variety of reasons, you know, in our personal lives, as, you know, as well as some stuff with school. We won't override you guys with the boring stories of necessarily, like, why we stopped, because, you know, we're more hyped than ever to get this thing back cranking and going up. But, you know, we're, like I said, we're just more excited than anything. And if you guys do want to know the reasons for whatever reason you may have, you can always reach out to us on our personal Twitters at WillMillJ or at Jaren Boslow.
Yep.
But today we're just excited to get back into the groove in terms of talking about Mavericks things. Going forward, we're going to resume our game coverage of Mavericks podcasts. We have a lot of plans as to how we can amplify this podcast and grow it to a place even, you know, in I'd say a more richer and greener pasture than it was before. So we are very excited as to how that process is going to unfold. And of course, it's happening at sort of the perfect time with the way that the Mavericks have been playing, as you know, as of recent, having won 15 of their last 17 games. I mean, you know, since we started the Mainstream Mouse podcast, this is easily, you know, the best the team has been, which I think, you know, warrants us coming back, you know, even more so than ever. And, you know, we have the time to be able to, you know, properly allocate towards this now. So, you know, it's only going to be full-fledged from here on up. You have any thoughts, Jaren?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm excited to get back in it. Obviously, the Mavs are 16-2 in their last 18 games. I think that this is probably the best time to start. Playoffs are around the corner. Only 4 regular season games left. If you're listening to this, I guess it would probably be just a few hours before tip-off between the Mavericks and the Charlotte Hornets. But I'm more excited than ever to get this thing back on the road. And obviously, yes, we had a long hiatus. And yes, you know, we missed a good chunk of the regular season. You know, we looked back at it before we clicked record, and the last podcast we did, the Mavericks were 4-0, and now we're 4 games left in the regular season. So obviously, in terms of our coverage, we have missed a lot. But look, we've been doing our thing. We've been over on the Smoking Cuban. If any of y'all follow our personal accounts, which we'll shout it out earlier, we obviously have been doing pretty hard work in terms of that. But I'm excited to get back on the mic. And I'm excited to interact with y'all and get, of course, obviously back on track with Mavericks and talking Mavericks.
Yeah, most certainly. I don't think you could have said it any better. And we are in this podcast going to talk a lot about the Mavericks, more so from a big picture perspective, kind of how things have gone since the trade deadline, because those are definitely, you know, the most sort of significant things that we missed, you know, in our very long hiatus, obviously. But, you know, this recent stretch that the Mavericks have played, obviously, has definitely been a season-defining stretch. So we'll have a sort of broad overview of that. You know, obviously, the Mavericks last played against the Rockets in that overtime thriller. You know, we'll of course, talk about that game a little bit. We're not going to go in-depth into that as we would in a traditional post-game podcast. You know, we'll start doing our regular post-game game coverage podcast where we, you know, delve, you know, more into the intricacies of what happened in the game, whatnot, after the Mavericks game against the Charlotte Hornets tonight. You know, as you, if you guys are listening to this on Thursday, or me, Tuesday, no, obviously. Tuesday. Yeah. But yeah, nonetheless, we obviously don't have an advertisement anymore, a sponsor, because we've been out of the game for so long that our only sponsor is out, but hopefully at some point we will accrue some more sponsors. But we will still have a quick break, and we will see you guys right after the intro. All right, so getting back into it, we obviously missed the most significant moves that the Mavericks made this season. Well, in fact, like, I guess technically some of their only roster transactions that they made on the season. And, you know, that being, of course, at the trade deadline, when Nico Harrison, Mark Cuban, whatever other parties were involved, decided to finally bolster the Mavericks front court by trading for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, you know, obviously two guys that bring a sense of defensive prowess to the Mavericks front court. You know, in Gafford's case, you know, he's a very dynamic pick and roll lob threat, a great rim protector. You know, the Mavericks add that in tandem with Derek Lively II, their rookie who has, you know, since we've last done this podcast, I think definitely vastly overperformed yes. expectations in terms of what a lot of people thought he was, you know, going to look like heading into this season. And, you know, Mavericks now have the ability to have 48 minutes of rim running shot blocking centers, you know, if they please, you know, that have great length and physicality, a true luxury, you know, and it was still being able to maintain Maxi Kleber. And then, you know, to add, you know, Washington is that sort of versatile chess piece that can play the three or the four, can defend bigger wings. And, you know, now that you're seeing his offensive game, you know, his offensive game sort of, you know, come into effect for Dallas at a high level. Now that he's draining more 3-point shots, you know, he's doing a better job of picking his spots when he does wish to attack off the dribble. He's, you know, getting guys sealed under the basket. You know, defensively rotating over as the low man, you know, in help side scenarios. You can't overemphasize how much of an impact these guys have made for the Mavericks thus far. You know, as having only been with the team, I think 20 games, So, you know, Jaren, what has been your interpretation of these trades from the Mavericks and, you know, that how they've affected their season? I know I also kind of didn't really get into who is going out in those trades. So if you want to talk about that at all, feel free. But obviously, you know, we'll start with the trade deadline and, you know, how that has shifted the Mavericks season for the better.
Yeah, I mean, for the better, I think that the most glaring issue going into the trade deadline and really for the past decade has been, you know, not just rim defense, but just defense in general. The Mavericks last season ranked almost last place at multiple points in the season. And even at this season, at points in the season, you know, they were well into the bottom 20s in terms of defensive rating as a team. So that the second that they got these two on the court together and, you know, well-adjusted into the starting lineup is whenever we started to see that defensive rating, and not just the defensive rating, but you could see it on the court in terms of turnovers, in terms of getting out in pace, affecting the offense, scoring in transition, which is what Kyrie Irving and Josh Green have done so well. Obviously, Josh Green has been out for a while now, and he'll make his return hopefully soon before the playoffs begin. But to get back in terms of defense, the Mavericks over the last 15 games have ranked number one, tied with the Boston Celtics in terms of defensive rating, currently 106. We'll see if that changes tonight against the Charlotte Hornets. But, I mean, just having these two on the court alone has affected the Mavericks defense dramatically. Obviously, PJ Washington, I think, came in. He was not expected to have this much of a defensive, in terms of team rating, not expected to have this much of a defensive effect. And I mean, he came in, he's done his job really well. I would say the one thing that has stuck, or the one thing that has been really well since the trade deadline has been his defense. Obviously, his offense has been up and down through stretches. It seems like it's finally coming together, but you know, you just never know till playoff time comes around. But his defense has been A+ throughout most of his time as a Dallas Maverick. And then to speak on Gafford, you know, obviously, as you said, 48 minutes of strong physical rim running bigs. With him and Lively in tandem, you know, that just opens up so much more in terms of defense and offense. And having him an elite shot blocker at that rate, I mean, at one point in time, I want to say he was averaging 4 blocks early in his stint as a Maverick. And then obviously had that insane stretch of, 27 consecutive field goals made, almost inching up to Wilt Chamberlain's 32. But, you know, just having two guys that can do that at any time, at any point in the game is obviously critical. And that's why the Mavericks defense has improved so much. And that's because of those two. Obviously, Derrick Jones Jr. was inserted in the starting lineup during that time. But, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, the most glaring issue that has now turned into a positive has been the team in terms of defense. Now, to speak on, I guess, who went out in that trade, or in those multiple trades, rather, you know, you have Davis Bertāns, that was a long time ago. You have Seth Curry. I got to think back on this one. Seth Curry, Grant Williams, obviously. And then I'm forgetting one more. Rashawn Holmes. And then it was our 27 first for PJ. And then, it was a pick swap as well. And I believe those were the only players that were in sort of transaction round. Those were the only players that were out of those deals. And Grant Williams was the only rotational player in terms of those three names that were let off. But, I think defensive alone, and obviously the offense has improved, you know, and transition numbers have vastly jumped. The Mavericks are creating a lot more turnovers. Obviously, that defense, as I said, has bolstered up immensely because of those two. And I think that that's the biggest thing, especially going into the playoffs, that the Mavericks need to hold their head up. As I mentioned before, over the last 15 games, they've ranked first. I'm pretty sure over the season now, I want to say they're 14th or 13th. So defensive rating has jumped through the roof. Team rating has jumped through the roof. I want to say in the net rating over the last 15 games, the Mavericks are like second or third. Maybe even first over the Boston Celtics. So obviously those two have opened up so much just in terms of defense for, you know, all these guys to really play well.
No, for sure. And I want to backtrack. I thought that you had, you know, some great points, obviously, you know, about Gaffer and Lively for sure. But, you know, to get back on to PJ Washington, and, you know, you talked about how, you know, his defensive effort in Charlotte, you know, wasn't near as play this
hard. Nico openly talked about that.
Yeah, as he has with the Mavericks. And, you know, that was something that Nico called him out on at that press conference. You know, obviously that can maybe be not just attributed to, you know, Washington. You know, it obviously is his fault at the end of the day, I guess. But, you know, that culture in Charlotte, and you can kind of see with some of the moves that they're attempting to make right now to shift that culture, you know, it was not one of a winning culture.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, for those sorts of reasons, especially a younger NBA player, you know, on a team where winning is not always at the forefront and there are a lot of outside distractions, you know, it can be easy to, you know, stat hunt occasionally, maybe not give your full effort on defense, you know, when you're down 25 at, you know, points. You know, it just kind of is what it is. You can see how PJ Washington's physical tools may have not been on full display on that end in Charlotte because, you know, some of those ancillary factors. But, you know, with the Mavericks, he has taken the challenge, you know, from Nico Harrison as well as his coaching staff in full stride. And, you know, with his length and athleticism, you know, his defense at the 3 and 4 has been transformative for the Mavericks over this recent stretch. You know, not just on ball from in terms of, you know, having that physicality in tandem with that length, you know, being able to guard, you know, the bigger scorers in the league. We've already seen how much that's helped, but, you know, he is very savvy at getting his hands in passing lanes, you know, at being able to disrupt guys at the level of the screen. He, you know, is just a great presence on that end. And, you know, he's even made some plays that, you know, from a defensive perspective, that have like kind of taken me aback a little bit recently, because we just never saw anything to this effect when he was in Charlotte. Like, two that come to mind was that block that he had on, you know, Tracy Jackson Davis the other night when the Mavericks played the Warriors. And, you know, he rotated over as the low man, and, you know, Tracy Jackson Davis.
It's Trace, by the way.
Oh, my bad. All right. And nonetheless, he's obviously been a guy that, you know, for a rookie has been a great athlete from the center position. He's already caught a couple bodies this year, most notably one on Victor Wembanyama. So, you know, seeing, you know, Washington, you know, being able to, you know, not be held back by, you know, any sort of, you know, fear in terms of who he's going up against. You know, maybe if it was, you know, in Charlotte, he may have just let an easy dunk, you know, happen in that situation. But he is fully dialed into this Mavericks defense, you know, in all facets, both on and off the ball. And it's great to see. And, you know, now that it's, you know, carrying over to his offensive game, you know, we are seeing the ascension potentially of, you know, a guy that could in the coming years be, you know, not just a mainstay in the Mavericks starting lineup, but possibly, you know, their third best player on the team at points.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, PJ Washington, obviously, his offense is just now picking up, which couldn't have come at a better time, really, for the Mavericks. Not that their offense was stalling or anything like that, but, you know, just getting that extra jolt in terms of three-point shooting and really even in the short role. I mean, he's played so well out of the short role this year. Having a guy of his athleticism, of his caliber, to be able to make shots now is really going to take this team far in the playoffs.
And, I mean, he's been far more aggressive, too, recently, you know, to go in tandem with his – you know, game in the short role. He also has a great, you know, short game, if you will.
That
you know,
push shot.
Yeah, with
is
his push
really
shot.
Nice.
I mean, he's very, you know, especially when his three-point shot is hitting, you know, like kind of like we saw in that Golden State game when he had 32. That gives him, you know, I know Luka was out in that game and he obviously took on a little bit more.
That's the thing you need
responsibility.
Out of a third grader. Like, that's
no,
what you
especially,
need.
But, you know, we're – PJ is so athletic and you know versatile with his size. Obviously, from an offensive perspective, you know, there are still some, you know, elements of his game to which I think, you know, he could certainly polish better, and especially, you know, from the whole shot creation aspect. But, you know, to see that finally sort of, you know, start to evolve in Dallas, you know, is something special, because, you know, when he first kind of got here, you know, even though he was missing his threes, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a featured aspect of the Mavericks offense the first few games, especially, you know, even coming out of the All-Star break. But that has changed, you know, by a landslide. You know, he's active in terms of running in transition. And, you know, the Mavericks have been a lot more active in terms of, you know, setting up plays for him. I think he's proven himself, you know, in multiple clutch instances that he's worthy of those opportunities. And they've been, you know, finding different ways to incorporate him, you know, setting, you know, back screens and veer screens to get him coming downhill, you know, off of, you know, back cuts, you know, as well as curl offs. So, you know, he's getting involved within the flow of the offense. They're trying to get him downhill towards the rim a little bit more. And, you know, he even occasionally has, you know, a couple ISOs every game. So I'm really liking, you know, the full sort of PJ Washington offensive portfolio, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another underrated, I mean, you mentioned this a little bit, but another underrated aspect of his game is his cutting ability. You know, the Mavericks can work so much off ball action for him in terms of screens and stuff like that, that, you know, as you said, he can come off a back screen. He can come off a curl off. He can even set those screens for other guys like Kyrie or Derrick Jones Jr., whoever it is, to cut to the basket and then get to the, obviously, to the rim. And another aspect that I've noticed over the past few games is he's a really good slot cutter. You know, if the ball gets clogged up down low, he's always aware. He's always, you know, if he's not in a rebounding position or the dunker spot, he's always aware around the perimeter. You know, maybe I should get downhill. It's Kyrie Irving or Luka Doncic. Somebody's always down there that can create and pass the ball. And, you know, he's oftentimes found, and that's whenever he gets those big dunks, just driving down the lane. But I would say that's a big underrated aspect of his game. Obviously, the shooting is going to come. It's still here and there. It's still a little bit touchy. I mean, he had, what, 5 threes, I think, against the Warriors.
Yeah.
Maybe went 5 of 7 or something like that.
But,
so that,
I mean,
but that'll come.
Yeah, he's been working with the Mavericks assistant coaches diligently. And, I mean, you can see it in these games where he's, you know, the form in terms of how square he's getting, the follow through, everything looks good. And it's finally translating to the hardwood as of recent. But yeah, no, in terms of his cutting, I think that he has such a great catch radius as well. You know, as how physical he is in terms of attacking the ball. That's a, you know, aspect of his game that I think a lot of wings don't have, because especially with as fast as the NBA is, I mean, not saying he's a young player, but he's youngish. He's 25, you know, he's on Luka's timeline. I think a lot of players are definitely, you know, taken aback from the physicality and pace of the NBA, especially, you know, you see a lot of guys who will, you know, cut, but they don't cut with ill intention.
Yeah.
And, you know, PJ Washington, you know, oftentimes, you know, especially, you know, in those scenarios where he recognizes that there's, you know, 2-on-1 on the ball, you know, under the rim, and something's clogged up, and, you know, he's just able to do something at the end of the shot clock. Like, he is cutting with ill intention, you know, trying to get an and-one, a poster dunk, you know, whatever the case may be. He, you know, has been a huge, you know, component of this Mavericks offense as of recent. And, you know, if he does continue to play like this going into the playoffs, which I do think is one of the biggest question marks heading into the playoffs, obviously, as we kind of referenced, that, then, you know, I hate to use the cliche saying, but the sky's the limit for the Mavericks if that happens. Yeah.
No, I mean, no, most definitely. Like I said, like, I mean, his shooting, really everything about his offensive game is only coming along, and it's really only scratched the surface recently. I mean, I think he's only had 3 or 4 games as a Maverick that he scored over 17 points or something around that range. So, I mean, to get his shooting involved, to get obviously him more involved in the offense, which has only come as of recent, which, I mean, that was always something that was a little bit questionable about Jason Kidd. But I will say, over these last 15 games, he's really, I guess, stricken up on the rotation in terms of, you know, offensive function or plays run, you know, whatever it is, like guys getting involved. He's really, really, you know, I guess, tightened down on that. So, but yeah, getting PJ involved has only really, I guess, grown his confidence. And, you know, that's something that's going to be really key going, you know, forward, obviously, into the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a good transition point. You know, when you brought up the rotation there a second ago, obviously, Jason Kidd, you know, made some rotation changes within the last 17 games, you know, particularly after the trade deadline. If, you know, you all remember, and I'm sure you do if you're listening to this podcast, obviously, you know, the Mavericks, you know, make that move at the trade deadline for Washington Gafford in their first game at home at the AAC matinee game, blow out the Thunder. Every, you know, vibes are high. Everybody, you know, is on the moon about these new acquisitions. Mavericks were obviously still dealing with some injuries at the time. You know, they get everybody back, you know, post All-Star break after only playing a couple games, looking pretty good. And then they lose 5 out of 6 coming out of the break. What has been the difference stylistically for the Mavericks, you know, as well as within their rotation within these last 17 games since that, you know, loss to Indiana, where apparently the coaches and the players all had a conversation afterwards in regards to, you know, some changes that needed to be implemented?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Josh Green and Derek Lively were basically both reserved to a bench role. For Derek Lively, I would say it's worked out for the better. Obviously, he's hurt. We don't know his timetable for return, which is a little bit scary.
Well, I mean, he is projected to be back before the playoffs, but
it's just been a little cloudy, I guess, to say.
Same thing with Josh Green, same, too.
But he was first, he was doubtful.
He was listed as doubtful for this game tonight. So.
Yeah, so that's at least promising. But
yes, and he also, I believe, only had a grade 1 or 2 ankle sprain, and it's approaching almost, because I was writing about this, it's been almost a month. Yeah. It's been over 3 weeks.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously those two have been in the lineup recently, but in terms of starting lineup before, or I guess during that 1-5 stretch, rather, those two were in the starting lineup at the time. Those two were replaced by Derek Jones Jr. And Daniel Gafford. And obviously the Mavericks have, you know, I'm pretty sure they're 16-2 in that stretch since those two have been inserted in the starting lineup. The defense has gone through the roof. As I mentioned before, over the last 15 games, they've ranked first in defensive rating. And the offense has even benefited more. You know, Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, they're playing so well off of each other. They're not just playing, you know, one-on-one ball. It's not just, you know, who's gonna square up who, who's gonna size up who. They're really playing well off of each other. They're running sets for each other, even off-ball sets for each other. If PJ has the ball at the top of the key, or Daniel Gafford has the ball, you know, in the nail or something like that, they're running off-ball sets for each other to get each other open. I mean, this offense, dare I say, has looked the most impressive it has looked in 2 years, and this offense has been really good for 2 years now. I just think the biggest question was, how do you involve Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic together? And I mean, they've unlocked that, and I still think that they're figuring things out. I mean, this is only 20 games into this where we have really felt confident in Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic as a duo. I'm behind the train that they're the best duo this season. I don't think that there's been a duo this better, or that much better. And over the last 20 games, that they've proved that, I think that they are at least worthy of being mentioned in that discussion. But Obviously, the offense has benefited immensely from having Derrick Jones Jr. And, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. in the starting lineup isn't the biggest offensive jolt. I wrote about this recently. He's not going to be an offensive talent. He never has been, you know, the biggest offensive talent. But him nailing three-point shots as of recently is promising as well going into the playoffs. But he also just opens up a lot more, you know, in terms of defense. He's the guy, he's the Dorian Finney-Smith, rather, of the defensive team. And that's kind of what we needed. We needed a captain. We needed a guy who could hunker down on the defense. And I think that, you know, that can also be Daniel Gafford in a sense. But having a guy that's, you know, really just a star on the defensive end has benefited this offense a lot. And, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. has obviously taken a step back at times in his offense, but he's definitely taken a step forward for defense. So I think having those two, Daniel Gafford and Derrick Jones Jr., inserted in the starting lineup has only benefited this team that much better. And I mean, in the latest NBA or ESPN power rankings, whoever it was, they're fifth. I don't know if they're worthy of fifth right now. I mean, they've played great over the last 16, 18 games, really. Going into the playoffs, this team is going to be something that you don't want to see. And the Clippers, yes, they played really good recently. I'm assuming, you know, we're obviously four games. We're a week, really, away from knowing who our playoff matchup will be. But as of right now, we're currently the five seed, two games ahead of the Suns, in front of that sixth spot. So I think we're going to be playing the Clippers. And obviously, you know, Kawhi Leonard, assuming he stays healthy, and Paul George, I know I'm kind of going off the track here, but, you know, you're going to have two guys that can guard those guys, and Derrick Jones Jr. and PJ Washington. So it's going to be interesting to see. No playoff series in the West is going to be easy, but I feel comfortable with this team and how they have played over the last 20 games going into these playoffs.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I was glad that you brought up Luka and Kyrie, because, you know, I think we're almost like 30 minutes into the podcast and
not one mention. That might be a record.
No, but obviously, you know, don't want to get too broad in terms of, you know, boring you guys with how the whole season has fared out, but I do want to reserve a segment before we end to talk about them and how special that they've been recently, because I think that they do deserve their own sense of praise.
He won Player of the Week on Monday, so
he didn't win Player of the Week. That was the first time since 2020.
And the
whole juxtaposition of the Player of the Week awards 2 weeks in a row was really interesting, because we had Luka with Jalen Brunson win it the week previously, and then Kyrie and Porzingis. Yeah. Won it this week,
all former Mavericks,
yes, in some sort of sense. So I thought that was a funny little tidbit. But nonetheless, to backtrack to what you were saying about Derrick Jones Jr., look, you know, ever since he has been inserted into the starting lineup, he has become, you know, an all defensive caliber, you know, point of attack defender for the Mavericks. And the reason that I think all of it is so significant is because, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. has always had good length, good speed, you know, really good defensive intangibles. He's never, I think, been in a position to be a all-defensive player, because, you know, one of the only sort of knocks that you could maybe give Derrick Jones Jr. in terms of his defense is that he isn't the strongest guy in the world, and he can get knocked around a little, especially, you know, by bigs and bigger wings. He can obviously, you know, compensate with athleticism sometimes, but, you know, not in every instance, as we've seen. And, you know, before PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford joined this team, the Mavericks did not have the size to, you know, afford the luxury for Derrick Jones Jr. To be able to, you know, guard smaller wings and guards. You know, they predominantly had to stick him on the opposing team's, you know, best player from a guard or wing perspective, like, you know, regardless of who it was, you know, whether it be Kevin Durant. You know, now with Washington and Gafford in the lineup, it's just so much more. There's so much more, you know, plugging and playing in terms of, you know, from Jason Kidd's perspective, being able to mix up those lineup combinations to, you know, surround Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving with three guys, you know, who are versatile defenders. You know, even in the Mavericks, you know, in the instance of the Mavericks bigs. You know, with Gafford and Lively, they aren't guys who are slouches, you know, in terms of guarding the perimeter, even if it's not, you know, something that you'd say either of them are elite at, you know, as big men. So I think that, you know, that whole, you know, development of, you know, Washington, Gafford just being here, you know, giving, you know, Jones Jr. the leniency to be able to, you know, play at the point of attack more so in that starting lineup has been huge, especially, you know, when we've seen how much the Mavericks kind of struggled with that earlier on the season, you know, with teams really trying to, you know, exploit the Mavericks at the point of attack, you know, especially, you know, if Luka or Kyrie took an off night. We've seen Josh Green be very up and down defensively this year. He's had his games, of course, like that New York game comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, where he was able to, you know,
he had like 17 or something like that. But
yeah. And he was also, you know, picking up Jalen Brunson full court, playing some really good defense. And we've seen, you know, we've talked about in this podcast, Josh Green does have the athletic tools to be a really good NBA defender. But, you know, some of that, you know, from the intangibles perspective, he obviously, you know, has a tendency to overfoul, get out of position a little bit too often. And sometimes he's a little, he takes, you know, some gambles off ball that you, you know,
questionable.
Yeah. So, you know, being able, like I know I've said this, we've kind of said this like five times essentially between the two of us, but no, I mean, like having Jones Jr., Washington, Gafford to back up, you know, Luka Doncic and Kyrie, like it just cannot be overstated how much more dynamism that has added to this defense compared to what we've seen, you know, not just when we were doing the podcast earlier this season, you know, before the trade deadline, but even, you know, going back all of last season, the Mavericks have not had anything like this from a defensive perspective. And I'm not trying to say that they're obviously, you know, of this caliber, but they have not had a defense from top to bottom that I've seen, you know, has been this versatile, this athletic, this dynamic, you know, since the championship run.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, and I mean, obviously I wrote about this recently, but the last time the Mavericks had a player on an all-defensive team was in that 2010-2011 series with Tyson Chandler. So if Derek Jones Jr., you know, Daniel Gafford, whoever it is, ended up on one of those teams, like that would obviously be huge in terms of a morale standpoint and just a historic standpoint. Having a guy on the all-defensive team would be obviously huge, but it might be too little too late for those guys in terms of a season perspective. But we have yet to see. I mean, obviously we have four games left in the season heading up to Charlotte, but I mean, this team has looked nothing but amazing. As of recently, obviously, as we've pretty much hammered on the head, you know, having, you know, Derrick Jones Jr., having PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford all in the starting lineup has opened up so much for Luka and Kyrie. And I know we want to segment into that, so I guess this is a good enough segment, but they have played so well off of each other, obviously winning players of the week in back-to-back weeks. And was it Brunson and Luka that won Player of the Month the week before that or something?
I think so, yeah.
I know he was in contention, Luka that is, with Jalen Green. Obviously, the Rockets fell off, so I think that's what kind of gave the upper hand to Luka. But, I mean, Luka has gone out there. He's done his thing. Obviously, he's an MVP candidate. It's up to you whether or not he's an MVP winner or not. You know, there's plenty of debates going on there. But, I mean, these two have been playing an absolute peak of their careers, and that's saying a lot for Kyrie. You know, he might not be playing the best of his career, but he's surely playing a top two or three season in terms of his career, at least these last 20 games. I think he's been healthy for, what is it, 28 games now?
And I was
which
looking
has
at
the longest stretch of his career, I believe.
Yeah, so, I was looking at some of the, as I was looking at his season splits the other day for an article, and I think he's only played 70 games in his career, or over 70 games or more in his career twice, I believe. Don't quote me on that. It might be like three times. But he obviously, you know, amongst his different stops, you know, and when you could take into consideration how, you know, I'm not going to say frantic his play style is, because he, I mean, he's extremely skilled, but he is doing a lot of mid-air contorting, a lot of, like, you know, crazy sort of, you know, steps to try to will himself to the basket in a lot of these scenarios. And, you know, being a smaller guard, you can kind of see why, you know, he, you know, with his play style, he has gotten injured a few times over the course of his NBA career. But I think, you know, at this point, you know, we've only seen these sort of crazy, you know, outlandish, what's the word, just like kind of coming out of thin air injuries, you know, like with the white pat, freakish. Yes, man. We've only kind of seen like these like freakish injuries from Kyrie this season, and the, you know, the ones that have kept him out, you know, I think he had one that maybe if maybe kept him out 10 games at most. Or
I think that was the Dwight Powell injury.
Yeah,
the one where he stepped on his ankle.
Yeah, stepped on his ankle. But, you know, when you take a look at that from a broad perspective, you know, I honestly think, you know, at age 32, you know, seeing Kyrie getting these dunks this season and everything.
Yeah, six dunks now?
You know,
six or seven, I think.
Yeah, no, it's something like that. And it might be like five, or I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a career high.
Yeah, it is a career high. You know, I think that he honestly throughout his NBA career has gotten to a point. I mean, you even look at him throughout this whole month of Ramadan that he's been, you know, fasting for, you know, still hitting that game winner against the Denver Nuggets in incredible fashion, you know, whilst fasting, you know, during the day. I think he's probably gotten to, you know, a very advanced point in terms of understanding his body, you know, and how he can, you know, do his best, you know, amidst the flow of the game to prevent injuries. Because as good as Kyrie has been for the Mavericks, and this is like not even a knock on him whatsoever, just speaking strictly stylistically, you know, he's not, I wouldn't say he's getting to the rim as much as, you know, his younger days. I think he's, you know, settling more for floaters, for mid-range, and, you know, he's still making them because he is that skilled. But I think that he has definitely garnered, you know, a sort of greater sense for how to, you know, maintain health. And, you know, he's not dealing with anything off the court with the Mavericks compared to his other stops. And we obviously see how team-friendly the culture has been and how good the chemistry has been, you know, not just with Kyrie in the organization, but just amongst everybody. You know, that's obviously one of the biggest factors for, you know, how successful the Mavericks have been this season, what's led them to get to, you know, 48 and 30 up until this point. And you know, it all kind of synchronizes together in terms of, you know, being this perfect blend, you know, where Kyrie, you know, I think his, you know, I can't validate, you know, my hypothesis of him, you know, being, trying to prevent these injuries or doing a more effective job of that. But, you know, from the eye test, you know, that's certainly valid. And, you know, especially with the way the Mavericks have treated him, it's led to him being on the court a lot more this year.
Absolutely. And, you know, and not just being on the court a lot more, but playing, you know, and this might not be even the best.
That's not to say he wasn't, just a quick disclaimer, it's not to say he was like missing any games last year with the Mavericks.
No. It's just like you mentioned, this freakish injuries, the one, you know, one or two games that kept him out. Like, you know, I think that's just been Kyrie his career. And, you know, that's a knock on him. That's just.
But the Brooklyn situation, there were definitely a lot of off-court factors going on.
That was off-court tandems.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Kyrie, I want to say that this is one of the biggest stretches of his career where he's played 28 games in a row. Obviously, he's hit some crazy shots through that process. But I think the cherry on top was just seeing Luka and him embrace each other after that Houston win. I mean, that was a crazy scenario. I'm just going to come out and I'm going to be honest. I turned the game off with like 13 seconds left because I didn't think they were going to make a comeback. I thought Jabari Smith was going to hit those two free throws. I'm just going to be honest. But I saw the Twitter notifications and I turned the game back on. But, you know, even still, just seeing those two embrace each other. I won't make that mistake again. Yeah. But just seeing those two embrace each other. And then shortly after, obviously, the team came together at center court, or somewhere on the court, and embraced each other. I think it's just proven and shown what all this team has, you know, really bled through over the last 18 games. Obviously, you know, in total, it's been an up and down season for the Mavericks. But to be where they are now, 48 and 30, fifth in the Western Conference, two games back of the Los Angeles Clippers, who have a relatively tough schedule. So you never know. I mean, anything's possible in the NBA, as we saw on Sunday. But you never know. Maybe there's a fourth seed in sight for the Mavericks. I mean, I'm not going to rule it out, but it's very unlikely. But just two games back of the Clippers, to be where the Mavericks are right now is very unlikely, considering, you know, what all has transpired years before that. Maybe not that Western Conference year, but things leading up to that have, you know, really, I guess, had a hold on this team and had a hold on this Luka era. So, and I'm kind of like, we're going big picture here, but to see everything happen now is, you know, it, not that it puts a tear in my eye, but it puts a smile on my face. And I'm really happy. And I'm really happy that we're back here, obviously talking about this now, but seeing those two play so well together and seeing Luka have a teammate like Kyrie Irving has been only better for him in his career moving forward. And he's only 25. I mean, he's only in the sixth season or seventh season. I've lost track at this point, but I mean, to see him playing at peak moments or not playing at peak moments, but playing at a peak in his career, is obviously something to watch. And, you know, we're going to take it for granted because, you know, in 10 years from now, we're going to be watching highlights on our couch, dreaming that the Mavericks were this good after we traded all our dollar draft picks away. But, you know, we're living in it now, so embrace it while it's happening. And see, like I said, seeing these two together and seeing these two play so well together has obviously been a year of pain leading up to this point. So that's all I got to say about those two.
No, I think as far as
a whole goes.
So. I think that was a great anecdote and definitely can be representative, I think, of what a lot of Mavericks fans have gone through in the, you know, in the Luka era, you know, thus far, where it's, you know, been the Mavericks essentially trying to battle uphill to surround Luka with a talented enough roster to, you know, be a real contender after, you know, subsequently finding out that he was a lot better than they initially projected, you know, after the first year that he was here. And, you know, obviously we've had some struggles, you know, getting there, and we've had some highs, you know, with the 2022 playoffs, like Jaren talked about. But it would, you know, to see things end in a, you know, triumphant fashion this year, you know, whether, you know, it be, you know, the Mavericks getting back just to the Western Conference Finals, you know, at least winning a playoff series, you know, just taking a step in the right direction compared to last year, is obviously, you know, the biggest thing that they need to do first, you know, getting to the playoffs. And I guess in that sense, they've already done that. But, you know, with this team's expectations, you know, having, I think, changed pretty drastically after, you know, how we've seen them play recently, you know, I think that anything short of getting to the second round would definitely be a little bit underwhelming for how well they've looked recently. And that's not to say that it would be a failed season because, you know, in totality, because I think we saw a lot of great basketball over this recent stretch. And, you know, it has been very, you know, readily impressive how, you know, this Mavericks team, you know, you can say all you want about, you know, how well they fit together on paper and how that makes it easy for them to, you know, kind of blend seamlessly together. But, you know, in terms of mixing and matching all these different personalities and you know, having a big roster, a fairly decently sized, you know, roster overhaul at the trade, you know, you're swapping essentially, you know, three guys for two.
Yeah.
And
one rotational guy for two.
Yeah. Starters. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for everybody, for the vibes to be, you know, at an all-time high, for Gafford and Washington to, you know, already have great chemistry, you know, already like friendships with guys on the roster and, you know, more determined than ever to try to compete for a championship. You know, you just couldn't ask for a better scenario as a Mavericks fan. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, it is a, you know, indictment upon Nico Harrison, the moves that they made at the trade deadline. And, you know, we got to give him and the Mavericks, you know, management, Mark Cuban, whoever else is involved, we got to give them their flowers despite, you know, all of the, our past sort of, you know,
what's efforts. The word?
Yeah. our past bouts that we've sort of had with, you know, how they ran things. But, you know, that's overall, I think most Mavericks fans would definitely subscribe to the theory that Nico Harrison has done a pretty good job so far, you know, even minus the Washington and Gafford moves. He's just done really good at trying things and, you know, being an active, you know, general manager. Yep. I think something Donnie Nelson in the latter half of his tenure in Dallas can't necessarily say. You know, that's obviously, you know, that's talking extremely big picture. But, you know, it's all coming to fruition for the Mavericks at the perfect time, and all parties involved obviously have a fingerprint in this process.
Yeah, I mean, as we mentioned, you know, obviously there's been a lot of lead up to, I guess, why Mavs fans are, you know, so emotional during this run, so, I guess, attached during this stretch of regular season. Obviously, you know, this could be all for nothing if the Mavericks fall to the sixth seed and have to play the Denver Nuggets. You know, whatever happens, I mean, through these next four games is obviously going to happen. But as we stand right now, best case scenario is either they fall to the sixth seed and they play the Thunder, or they stay at five and play the Clippers, and then hopefully the Thunder get the first seed.
It does seem, and we have not seen any teams in the play-in area start like tanking to try to, you know, play the whole seeding positioning game at any point, because it's a little bit too risky. And they, you know, I heard them talk about this in Low Post podcast earlier. You're hearing it on the Mainstream Mass podcast too. So Yeah, exactly. So that's not something I would anticipate from the Mavericks. I do anticipate for them to finish out these next four games pretty strong, you know, based on the way they're playing. Obviously, I don't know if they'll win all four, especially, you know, maybe the last game or two of the season, just depending on if there is any sort of threat toward that fifth seed, you know, assuming that they, you know, still maintain their position there. Perhaps we could maybe see the Mavericks rest their starters for a game and, you know, let the young guys play in their last regular season contest, which I believe is against the Thunder.
The Thunder on Sunday.
Yes. So, yeah, especially if the Thunder have the number one, two, or three seed locked up at that point. But this has been the most sort of knack and knack race for those top three seeds in the West that we've seen in a long time. So Mavericks may be having to play a tight contest there. We'll see how everything plays out. Or, you know, maybe at least the Mavericks could afford to take a loss. And even if OKC is still trying to, you know, compete for seeding positioning, just depending on how things all play out. But, you know, at least, you know, these next two games in Charlotte, Miami, for sure. I don't anticipate the Mavericks taking lightly at all. Obviously, the Mavericks will be, you know, in Charlotte. Or are they playing at home?
No, they're playing
at home. Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay.
PJ's return.
Yes,
and
PJ's return
against Grant Williams.
And, you know, going back, getting to play against Grant Williams once again. It'll be interesting to see if Grant Williams gets a little chippy.
That's what I'm expecting.
You know, as we've seen with his time in Dallas, he obviously is a very vocal guy. And me and, you know, Jaren, you know, we can't say that we completely hate Grant Williams, because he actually, you know, when he was signed to the Mavericks, signed and traded rather, we did a podcast, and to this day, that is still our highest grossing podcast.
Yes, we have to give him some flowers. Ever done.
So we will give him his flowers, even though that move didn't necessarily turn out the way that we anticipated. If you last listened to our podcast, you know, four games into the season, we're probably talking pretty highly about Grant Williams.
He's averaging 15. Yeah, like he was 48% from three.
You know, now, and we know how, you know, obviously his playing weight not necessarily being where it needed to be, and him, you know, not being prepared to, I think, take on the stamina aspect of being a really good 3-and-D player, you know, who, you know, playing starting level minutes. I think that was obviously like, you know, the biggest, you know, thing that held him back as the season kept going on until he was eventually traded. You know, obviously he has, you know, the obvious, you know, sort of athletic deficiencies compared to some other wings, but with his size, you know, after he's lost weight, he is playing a lot better in Charlotte, you know, even in a pretty featured role off the bench. I don't know if he started for them or not.
Honestly, I'm not watching Charlotte Hornets games.
But we'll get to watch one later tonight, and it will be interesting to see. You know, in terms of our future podcasts, we definitely are going to get a little bit more into the playoff matchups. Today was just a brief overview, because obviously, you know, it doesn't take a fool to look at the standings and see the Mavericks are probably going to play the Clippers, you know, depending on how these last four games play out. So, you know, we're obviously going, you know, as all Mavericks fans are, they're going to monitor that situation with a very, very, very keen eye. And we'll continue to, you know, podcast on that accordingly. But we will definitely commit a podcast before the playoffs start, you know, toward previewing the Mavericks playoff matchup in full effect. And if we have time, we may even get around to potential playoff matchups, if things are still kind of up in the air within the, you know, with a couple games to go left in the regular season, then that is definitely something that we might be interested in doing. I feel like we did a pretty good job, Jaren, of touching base on everything that's happened since the trade deadline in our absence. The one thing I will say, I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit, this, you know, somewhat minor.
Is this your boy?
No.
I think we're gonna talk about AJ Lawson.
No. Good for him. Yeah, he did get a standard contract. Yeah. AJ Lawson got a standard contract, so we'll give a
Shout out to him for that, because you know I do think he will be a part of the Mavericks organization for at least hopefully next year. So I'm excited for him. But you know, I did want to touch base on the impact that Dante Exum and Maxi Kleber have had on this team over this recent stretch as well. I know they've been off the bench. We did talk about the Josh Green injury. We will definitely get into, you know, probably the next episode or two, a lot more on how the Mavericks can reacclimate Josh Green and Derek Lively a second ahead of the playoffs. But with them still remaining out, you know, we'll kind of keep our focal point on what's happening. Jaren, you know, before we wrap this one off, you know, quick thoughts just on how, you know, if you want to just do one of the guys and I can take the other, on how, you know, one of Dante Exum or Maxi Kleber, you know, have really contributed to this Mavericks team in this recent stretch, because, you know, both of those guys were playing, I would say, some of their worst basketball of the season right after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially with Exum coming off his injury and his whole minutes restriction deal, he did not look like himself. And Kleber didn't seem like he could hit the broadside of a barn for, you know, over a month and a half. But things have, you know, dramatically shifted as of late. Obviously, we hope, you know, it keeps up with, you know, both of these guys being in roles that I think are very well suited to how productive they can be in that time span. I think that when you stretch either of them, you know, above that role a little bit too much, there could be some implications there. Though, you know, Exum has proven that there are games that he can play starter level minutes and be completely fine, just depending on how well the shooting's clicking. What have you, like I said, if you would like to take, you know, one of those guys and, you know, kind of just elaborate.
I'll take the better of the two. I'll take Dante Exum here. But, I mean, Dante Exum has obviously played a career year for him and his standards. He's going to get a very lucrative contract next season. You know, hopefully it's with the Mavericks. If not, he's going to get paid very well. But, I mean, obviously Dante has played extremely well. He's been, you know, off the bench probably in terms of the Mavericks six man other than Tim Hardaway. Well, recently, I would say he has been the six man for the Mavericks. You know, him, he's been a great point of attack defender. He obviously is the first sub for Derek Jones Jr. And even plays closing minutes in favor of Derek Jones Jr. So having a guy that can play defense and of course score at a better rate than, you know, someone of DJJ, you know, is the reason why Dante Exum has become so successful. He's obviously knocked down some really clutch shots over the last few weeks for the Mavericks. The first one was obviously against the Kings. That was to take a 3-point or 4-point lead over the Kings, and a very crucial baseball series-esque series between the Kings. And then obviously the most recent was probably his best shot of the season, most important shot of the season.
Probably best shot of his NBA career.
Best shot of his NBA career. Yeah. I could have highlighted that too. But that buzzer beating three to send it to overtime versus the Rockets in the most improbable fashion, 129-129. But, you know, Exum, you know, obviously I'm going to try and keep it short here, but he's played the best basketball of his career. As I said before, he's been an outstanding defender for the Mavericks. He's been an outstanding offensive player for the Mavericks, even through tough stretches. He's averaging over 50% on threes. I'm not sure what the criteria is to get his name in terms of like the best 3-point shooters in the league, because you have to have over a certain amount. Yeah. And I don't think he's reached that amount yet. I know like Grayson Allen, he's at like 47.8%, and he's the top shooter in the league. But Exum should be there by the end of the season, if he's not already there. So obviously, you know, I think that those numbers just need to go up for him to be considered in those conversations. Yeah. But as it stands right now, you know, he won't be talked about in the most improved conversation, just because Tyrese Maxey, guys of that caliber are leading that conversation. But to me, he's the most improved player in the NBA, just because he went from, you know, playing overseas. Obviously he played well overseas, but he went from an overseas team to playing starter level minutes for the Mavericks and playing one of the most important roles that the Mavericks have needed for, you know, really the past few seasons. So yeah, I'll pass it off to you for Maxi. But
no, for sure. And just to bounce off of Exum real quick, you know, I just really enjoyed seeing this whole season how he's like transcended expectations, you know, continually, first getting into the Mavericks rotation and you know, now being a crucial part of the Mavericks rotation. You know, after it seemed like he would kind of be maybe on the fringes when he came back from injury, his positioning, you know, seemed a lot more weary than it was previously. Obviously, you know, Josh Green had been playing most of his minutes. You know, obviously seeing how, you know, they play both of those two together when Josh Green's back, it will be a fascinating development as well. Definitely, you know, gives you, you know, even though Josh Green has not been the defender that we've liked him to be, it gives you a lot more defensive versatility with, you know, being able to, you know, have two guys who can defend the point of attack off the bench. You know, if Josh Green is, you know, for lack of a better term, on his shit. You know, like, you know, that's just kind of how it is. But no, I mean, he has been great. I've loved seeing how he's gotten a little bit better, especially as I think he's got more comfortable with both of the Mavericks' bigs. His, you know, playmaking abilities, I think, have been a lot, been something that's been, you know, had a spotlight thrusted upon it as of recently. Something that earlier on in the season we did not see near as much from him, but he's been doing a really good job at pushing the pace and transition. You know, he's very, he has a sort of smart sporadicness to him on offense, where, you know, he doesn't have the craziest dribble package, but he's so quick with his first step and he has so much ground that he can cover, that a lot of times, you know, a defender just turns his shoulder for a quick sec, maybe looking if a screen's coming or something, and, you know, one quick right in and out dribble and Dante Exum's at the rim, you know, either finishing, getting to the free throw line or passing out to a corner shooter. And, you know, that, you know, his pace of play has been something that I think has been extremely significant for the Mavericks, because their pace of play across the board is, like, you know, you talked about earlier, has just been off the charts. But to go to Maxey finally, you know, he's been doing a much better job, you know, compared to, obviously, you know, not just in that sort of a post All-Star stretch where, you know, he was, you know, playing pretty good defense, but not hitting his shots. But, you know, if we take a look back all the way earlier this season, you know, he missed a very significant chunk of games with, I believe it was that toe issue.
Yeah, it was a dislocated toe. Yeah. It kept dislocating, like, in and out. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, for him to actually come back and have an impact in the Mavericks rotations after, there were a lot of narratives. I mean, even I remember at the time, there was a time in like December, I wrote an article saying that, you know, he's a prime candidate to be, you know, traded or, you know, out of the Mavericks rotation upon him returning for injury. And, you know, to see how the Mavericks have finally been able to use him in a fair fashion where they're not, you know, kicking the treads off of his tires too much, you know, being able to, yes, play him as a small ball five if they need to close games, but that not necessarily being their primary inclination unless the matchup really just warrants it.
So it gets like Phoenix, it's understandable.
Yeah, against teams where there's just so much offense, and, you know, they likely in a series like that, I mean, not saying they'll play, but, you know, they would, Nurkic, I assume, probably could get played out of the rotation pretty fast by Luka and the Mavericks pick and roll. So, you know, like, you know, what Maxey's been able to do in terms of being adaptable to different roles and situations is something he's always been good at as a Maverick. But now that, you know, the Mavericks finally have the luxury to keep him in that sort of 20 to 25 minute range, you know, along with Gaffer and Lively, they're both kind of all three playing around the same minutes. But, you know, Maxey's been able to play the four some more, just gives the Mavericks a lot more rebounding, you know, a lot more, you know, interior, you know, defensive prowess. And, you know, now that he's finally starting to knock his shots down, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that, you know, fingers crossed that, you know, continues, obviously. But, you know, that is a huge, you know, development for the Mavericks, and that's obviously contributed huge, you know, hugely to their, you know, recent success. Everybody across the board on this team has looked good recently. Even Tim Hardaway Jr. is kind of getting out of his shooting slump a little bit. So, you know, there are a lot of things that we obviously didn't cover in this podcast that, you know, we will touch base on, you know, when the playoffs turn around. But overall, you know, I think we obviously talked a good portion about Luka and Kyrie, and we hit on everybody in terms of recently that has most significantly impacted this team. And, you know, now that we're back with the episode under our belts, we are only excited to continue to go. I genuinely, you know, now that we've wrapped this up, I still maintain the belief that there's not a better time to start the podcast back up than right now. I'm very, very excited as we get into the playoffs. We're going to do a lot more in terms of interacting with you guys. We got a lot of stuff planned, a lot of stuff planned. You know, we'll be going to at least one game in the playoffs in round one for sure too. So we're going to be coordinating some stuff, you know, with you fans and whatnot. You know, so if you guys would like to meet up in any sort of fashion at the game, you know, feel more than free to reach out to us on our Twitter. So, you know, at Will Mill J, at Jaren Boslow, obviously. Make sure to follow our podcast Twitter at Mainstream214. We're going to be a lot more active on there, obviously reposting our podcasts, you know, and whatnot, not just doing that, but, you know, also, you know, we'll definitely be tweeting during the games and stuff a little bit more often, you know, trying to promote that account, you know, so we can grow and reach more Mavs fans and, you know, have more of these lively discussions, no pun intended.
No, I was about to say.
Yeah. But other than that, you guys have a good rest of your day, and hopefully, if you were somehow saying this before the Hornets game, hopefully it was a good sort of preview for the game, even though it was very broad perspective sort of pod with us getting back into it. But if you were saying this after the game, hopefully the Mavericks won. I would assume they did, but, you know.
19 wins isn't for nothing.
Yeah,
you know.
The PTSD from the Hornets losses last year season is certainly creeping in, especially – with a potential Grant Williams revenge game. So we'll stay tuned for tonight, but we're excited to be back on the mic tomorrow, regardless of what happens. We unfortunately probably will not have time to podcast tonight, but we will be back either tomorrow morning or sometime, you know, midday tomorrow. So we will catch you guys in the next one. We don't have, you know, any, like I said, any advertisements to put anymore. So hopefully that's coming soon. But other than that, this has been the reinstallation of the Mainstream Mass Podcast, and we will catch you guys in the next one.
Bye-bye.